Hello, everybody. You are listening to Limited Playtime, the board game podcast, where we bring you board game reviews in 30 minutes or less.
Or the next episode is free.
But not today. It's day three of Gen Con. It's actually day four of Gen Con, but we only do three recordings for Gen Con. We're combining day three and day four into one recording. It's a mega episode.
Wow. Woo!
It's the Voltron of LPT episodes.
By our powers combined.
Yes.
This is Captain Planet.
Yes, so we played a bunch of games between yesterday and today, both at the show, in the hotel room that we were staying in, and now at my house, which is where we are now, which is where we're recording, and we want to get this out the door before Jason's got to go tomorrow, so here
we are.
Going
home.
Yeah. So, let's just start at the top of the list. One of the games that I picked up at Gen Con, it's been out for a little while, but I think like it's been kind of selling out print runs, and so they did a big reprint, and they also printed a bunch of actual like art prints of the art in the game, is Cosmic Frog.
It does have fantastic art.
It does. So this is a game about a bunch of 2 mile high cosmic entity frogs that are consuming different types of land from like sort of a shattered world. For some reason, and then you absorb it into your gullet, and then you jump off into space and go to your like interdimensional vault, and then store it there. And everybody's scored at the end of the game based on how well they arrange the land pieces they've got in their vault. And in the middle of that, you've got like these ability cards that give everybody sort of asymmetrical powers that can affect movement around on the world, how you attack other frogs, can affect ways that you get or use oomph, which is a resource in the game. You can attack other frogs, and you can just like suck the land out of their stomach, and you can take it yourself. You can assault their vault if they're like basically like lost in time and space out
right,
of what's called an outer dimension. And it's pretty straightforward to play.
Frog Wars in Space.
Yeah, that's basically what it is.
I do have a question. What's the to what purpose do they store all these land chunks in their vault?
There's a whole story at the beginning of the book. It's not very clear. Like, it's written like it uses a bunch of names. It was like, it's like, and you know, like Ig came and said that we must create, you know, like the whatever, an entity or whatever to go out and consume, you know, and it feels like somebody's like alternate universe Bible or something like that. So I have a
like
hard
big,
time
big on ideas and I, short on specifics.
Exactly. I have a hard idea explaining exactly what the deal is with this, but there's a story there, and I guess I haven't spent enough time trying to really dissect it and absorb it to give it.
But giant frogs.
Yeah. So anyway, we played that. Our game went surprisingly quick.
Very fast.
We set it up for what is considered the quick game, the short game in the book, and we thought that would be like, you know, an hour maybe, or like 45 minutes. And I mean, like, it was maybe like 25, 30 minutes before the entire landmass was just destroyed, and that was it. That was the game.
That was it.
Yeah, and so we, you know, like, Jason had already been just like kind of like diversifying the types of land that he had, and I was going for like more of a long game. I mean, not thinking about long game, but like thinking about like, you know, resource generation sort of strategy. And so I was trying to build that up, and that did not help because the game ended so quickly.
Really fast.
Yeah. I think Dave was kind of doing the same thing. Our friend Dave was there with us too.
Yeah.
And so it felt like one of those games where the game was over before you even really got to get started, you know. We've only played the one time, so I'm not really confident that I can give final judgment even by LPT standards on this one. The art is phenomenal. I did buy one of the prints, and I'm very – I liked what I saw. I don't know if it's like one of the best games of all time or anything, but I'm excited to try again and play more.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. Like, I find the concept amusing enough.
A little bit closer.
And the gameplay was fun enough for the amount of time that we got to play, I guess. I would like to see a longer game, though. I would like to see, you know, more varied use of some of the mechanics, because there was virtually no conflict between us.
Zero.
Yeah.
We did not have a conflict.
Yeah.
One. We did not have one conflict between any of the three frogs.
So basically, I ended up using maybe two mechanics, like, leap and
exactly
eat or whatever.
We just haven't explored it fully, so we're gonna hopefully play that some more. There's a tabletop simulator mod, and I believe that it's an official one, so it should be pretty good and representative of the game. So if we don't have a time to play that before Jason leaves tomorrow, we'll at least get that in eventually, and then we'll probably do a full review on it one day.
Sure.
Next was Demon Hunters, a comedy of terrors. This is a role-playing game we've talked about on the show before because we play it every year that we can. I think the only year that we've missed it in the last, like, maybe, like, 5 years
was last year.
Was last year because they canceled it during the virtual Gen Con.
Yeah.
And this is a role-playing game. It kind of uses its own system, but it's, like, it's an adaptation of the Fate system. And it's sort of like a rules light, you know, like, narrative, high narrative game system. And Demon Hunters itself is sort of like a campaign setting that people have put together, this group has put together. Was it the Dead Gentlemen or something like that?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Have put together that is like basically, oh gosh, well, how would you describe it? I mean, like it's
sort of like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but with
horror and sci-fi elements.
But instead of like criminals, they chase supernatural things.
Yeah. Everybody's kind of goofy, kind of skewed. A comedy of terrors is an intentional name. Like it's definitely meant to be very tongue in cheek and very silly.
Very much.
Yeah.
And the characters are all like wacky.
Yeah. And we have, I think I have one of the best times that I have at the show every year when I play that game. I highly recommend that to anybody that has an opportunity to play it. We were talking to the DM and he was like, "Oh, you play this?" And we're like, "Well, we play it at Gen Con when someone else can run it for us."
Right.
I was like, "Oh, well, do you have the materials?" "No, because we just have someone else run it for us." And he's like, "Well, that's the right way to do it, I guess." But I feel kind of bad. Like, I feel like we should probably own a copy or something.
Since we play it every year.
Like, maybe throw the publishers and the designers a bone or something
right.
I mean I think I probably would like to sit down and actually like just read the material even if I never ran the game or anything. So
you said that there's a movie of this?
I think it started with, like, they were in college and they put together like a film and then it just kind of like sprawled out from there.
He said
he didn't want to say no but low budget. He said he wanted to say no budget for
right?
the film. Yeah. But we should check that out sometime.
Yeah, sure, I'd like. Be game.
So Demon Hunters, did that hold up for you?
Yeah, I mean it was fun. I played a character that I'd played before, because the first pick, so it's just a bit of a backstory to this, but I picked a character and then somebody else picked a character who was very similar to the one that I had picked. So I picked a character that I'd played before just so we could start playing the game. So I kind of wish I had picked a different character, and had rolled better than I did on that game. But yeah, I mean, this, it's always kind of a fun time just to play goofy characters and see what everybody comes up with. And
yep, it wasn't, we talked about it afterwards, so usually when we play this game we're like at least like, you know, like losing ourselves, like laughing at some point during the game. This was definitely an amusing game and a fun game, but it wasn't like, you know, the wild laughter that we often have with these games. So,
right, yeah.
Probably not like, you know, the best time we've ever had with Demon Hunters, but always a good time with Demon Hunters,
of course.
So, yeah, I can't wait to play again next year. And maybe read the book.
See the movie?
We'll see the movie.
Yeah.
Next, we're going to talk about a little game called Factory 42.
Yeah. So, who publishes this one?
I don't know.
I don't remember either.
I don't remember.
Anyway.
It was like something demons or, I don't know. You want to look it up while you talk?
Wizard? Dragon.
That sounds familiar.
Some weird fantasy thing?
I don't know. Describe it and
Okay. So, basically, the conceit behind this is that you're a bunch of dwarves. Marxist dwarves, running a mining / manufacturing production for the state. And so it's largely a worker placement game, and there's like, I don't know, almost like 20 different workstations that you can put people on.
It's like just below that, right? It's like 15, it's like 18, or 18, 19, or 18.
Yeah. And they all do different stuff, you know, like, okay, so there's like a common pool of resources and you can get stuff from the common pool and you can sometimes add stuff to the common pool. And then you have to like load a bunch of stuff into carts and send them to the various manufacturing places, which are all on individual player boards. So you have to get it so that like somebody can fill a government order based with the stuff that is shipped to them. Because that's, you know, if you don't fulfill the orders, it's bad. We didn't get that far. And then as the game progresses, it's not a cooperative game. It's a point-based game.
It's a semi-cooperative game, right? I mean, because people have to kind of work together in order to get
to fill the
orders. A little bit.
But you will, a person does win by getting points.
Yeah.
And part of that is a part that we didn't really explore, which was this sort of like bribery negotiation kind of aspect of it. To basically like undercut your competitors and get more points.
Yeah, or to just like, you know, say you, like act like you are like working in concert with the other players in order to achieve a certain goal, and then when it's your turn to place a worker that everybody's depending on, you just put it somewhere else.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah. So the deal with this game was, I mean, I thought the concept was interesting. I thought the fact that it was sort of like semi-cooperative was kind of interesting, and I wanted to check it out. And it was not the best experience. And I don't think necessarily because of the game. I think it was more the situation that we were in, because the person that was running the game was stretched too thin. She was trying to teach two groups of people to play it at the same time. We couldn't hear her half the time when she was explaining the rules, and when she was explaining the rules, she was only really kind of half explaining them.
I would say not like she didn't, when she started out, her first instruction was, it's real easy. Just
read,
the
board.
Yeah. Yeah. And the things that the board refers to are not explained.
Right.
So that's not helpful.
Right.
And
yeah.
We kept asking more questions, and then she would not answer them in various ways and then walk away. And it was a bad teaching experience.
I mean, it was.
It's probably the worst teaching experience we've ever had at Gen Con.
Yeah. Yeah. I would certainly, even worse than Nemo.
Which was its own special thing, and I don't blame the guy. He was under a lot of stress and very entertaining because
right,
of it.
Yes. So we managed to muddle our way through with a combination of a little bit of input from the person running the game and then a lot of input from us just reading the rules.
Yeah.
And it took us an hour to get through one round. And
of
there was,
six.
And there were supposed to be six.
Yeah.
So after one round, we were like, we've seen enough.
Yeah. You know, you're saying that you think it's mostly the GM's fault, and I think that that's also, you know, I think it's probably like a 60-40 split or something, because the game is
maybe 80-20.
I don't know. The game is intimidating initially to look at, just because,
yeah, there's a lot
only,
of stuff.
Not only is there so much text on the board for you to parse and then also cross reference with the actual rules to find out what all that text means, but there's several other things going on. It's very small text. Like from where I was sitting a couple of feet from the board, I couldn't read any of it. You know,
right.
Only like I think you and the girl that was sitting next to me, and maybe I think the guy next to her, her dad, was like a little closer to the board.
Yeah.
And could read a little bit better than me. But I mean, I just felt like I was lost in the woods the whole time because I couldn't read what was going on the board. I'm colorblind. And there was, I think, ten different types of cubes in the game.
Something. There were like 8 to 10 different types of resources.
I think I counted, and I think it was 10. And now they use some different sizes to try to help differentiate it. And there, you know, like there are a lot of colors there that I can see just fine, but there's at least 3 or 4 colors that look, you know, close enough that it's a struggle for me, you know?
Yeah.
And so for me as a colorblind individual and somebody that's sitting a little bit further away from the board, the game itself, the components weren't doing me any favors, right?
Yeah.
It was difficult to read. It's the readability of the entire thing is just a mess. And I think that that's not only because I'm colorblind, but just because, like, everything is so small.
And very, very packed in.
Yeah, and very dense. Very dense of information. And then, you know, like, it's not the most complicated game I've ever played. But,
no.
But it's complicated enough that given all of those extra handicaps, it just feels overwhelming at times.
Yeah, definitely. If we had not had the rule book there, we wouldn't have even been able to figure out the brief slice of it that we did. There was just so much going on, and I really wish I don't want to say like I didn't like the game, because there was a lot of stuff that wasn't the game's fault that was sort of coloring the experience. So I would like to give it maybe a fair shake at some point, but right now there's a really bad taste in my mouth, and I don't really want to go back to it anytime soon.
I don't know that I want to play it again. And it's not just because that we had that bad experience. I think it's because I looked at it, and when we played through that round, it just kind of felt like, I don't know, like you're just fulfilling these tasks, you know? Like it felt like this rote activity of, okay, we see that we need these things here, so we'll take turns grabbing those things, putting them in the little block tower that they fall through, so hopefully we get the resources that we need. And then we just go through the motions of the putting things here, moving the thing. I don't know. Like,
isn't that every game?
I don't know. This felt more like just a chore to me.
Okay.
Than normal games. Like normal games have a lot more.
And I think that's because none of us were like, we didn't understand the game enough, first of all. And then second of all, we didn't We weren't trying to win the game because we were just trying to understand how the game works.
So a normal game has some form of variability in it, whether it's the other players that are going to, you know, like mess with what you're doing, whether it's random chance with the game itself using cards that get drawn out and, you know, aren't set, or dice rolling or whatever. You know, that's what we consider normal games, right? And I mean, there's exceptions to that for sure. But this game, it had random chance with what materials were going to fall out of this block tower that you pour them in. But I don't know, like, it didn't feel like it was random enough to really impact how the game played out.
Mm-hmm.
And because we weren't playing competitively yet at all, we didn't see any of that. It was just us, like, you know, like going through and just going down a checklist and doing the chores.
Right. Yeah.
And that was really boring. And I'm scared that because those activities weren't fun at all, doing them that way, that it's not going to be much more fun when I'm playing with the competitive cutthroat rules. Plus, I've just kind of been like I've been like a little bit less excited about the really cutthroat games lately. So as somebody that's feeling that way about that type of game, I kind of recoil at the thought of having to play that game again.
I think it's necessary to actually give a fair opinion of it.
I'm not giving a final opinion on it as far as like a judgment of the game. I'm just saying I don't really want to play it again.
Well, that's kind of a judgment, isn't it?
It's just how I feel.
So, this isn't a place for feelings, Kyle.
No.
This is for cold logic.
I think objectively Demon Hunters is great. Objectively, I think Cosmic Frog is at least good, right?
Okay.
Objectively, I'm not saying anything about Factory 42, okay? I'm just saying I don't want to play it again.
All right.
Yeah.
Move on.
Kemet.
Kemet.
Kemet, Blood and Sand. This is the new Kemet.
Yeah.
Kemet 2.
Kemet the Return. So Kemet's a game. The original Kemet is a game that I am familiar with. I own a copy of it. I've played it.
We reviewed it.
Yeah, exactly. I've played it at least once since then, I'm sure. Probably maybe a couple times. So I'm fairly familiar with it. And Kyle just, I think you kickstarted the,
last year, the
Blood and Sand one.
Yeah, it got, fulfilled in April or May, and I've played it. I've played the new copy once back in May. And then we just played the second time yesterday, a three-player game. And while there are a lot of similarities between it and the original game, there are some nuanced differences between them.
Sure.
And there's good and bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
The good is, I think, gameplay-wise, it is phenomenal.
Yeah.
We
had a really good time playing
it. It was an incredibly tense game. It was an incredibly strategic game. And it was an incredibly rewarding game, I think, for at least you and me, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think Dave really gave us his opinion. But for you and I, it was like, you know, like one of the best battles you and I have ever had in a competitive game.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that not only was it because we are well matched at playing games like that with each other, but also I think the game itself lends itself to a well-balanced battle on the table.
Yeah.
The bad is the rule book is kind of garbage in several ways.
Yeah, and some of the iconography is a little misleading.
A little bit, yeah. I think I eventually got over that, and, you know, like, they give you cheat sheet books, and at least in the Kickstarter copies, there's like five of them, so there's one for every player, unlike the previous game where it was like, you should definitely bring your iPad if you're going to go play this game, right?
Yeah,
so you can download some PDFs.
Yep.
But this game gives you what you need in order to get through the iconography. It does not give you what you need in order to understand all the rules perfectly well. And it doesn't even explain one of the main cards that you use when you're the battle cards that you're using to play the game.
Yeah.
It doesn't explain that this one, like, permanent damage icon is actually supposed to be self-inflicted. The only thing that it really explains is that they're permanent damage.
Right.
So it's very unclear with that. I think some of the other rules were like a little bit unclear, or at least difficult to look up at times. And so the rule book could be better. The gameplay itself is about as perfect as that kind of game can get, I think.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
You know, it has the same amount of like variety and customization as the original Kemet.
So good.
Yeah, with the power tiles, you know, upgrading your stuff and like getting new bonuses and whatever else.
The way that the combat works so that you're rewarded for being very aggressive.
Yeah.
But also, even if you lose, win or lose, attack or defend, you come away from that with like a veteran token, which allows you to, it's a very flexible token that allows you to basically replenish certain resources later in the round. Yeah. So that you have a better round next time.
That's a nice addition for this round of the game.
Yeah. And so I just felt like no matter what was happening, I was always pleased with the way things were going, even if I, you know, like was getting my butt kicked somewhere or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
So Kemet Blood and Sand is a great game to play if you know how to play the game. So the next game we played last night was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Changes. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Adventures Changes Constant. This is from IDW Games. I purchased this game when I found out that IDW Games was shuttering their games division a couple of weeks ago. And I was like, oh crap, if there's any games out there that I need made by IDW, I need to snatch them up now because they're never going to exist again. They're not going to get reprinted.
Right.
And so when I looked, I was like, okay, Ninja Turtles games that look like they might be fun, I'm going to buy them. So I bought Changes Constant and City Fall. So we've got these little miniatures. It's like a miniatures, you know, scenario based,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, I don't know what dungeon crawler makes sense because it's not really, you're not like exploring or anything like that, but it's, you know, it's like a cooperative skirmish game or a one versus all skirmish game.
Yeah. I mean, it's similar to like that Batman game we played a couple years ago.
Yeah. If you play one versus all, cause that Batman game is one versus all.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's other games like this where you set up like, you know, you set up a scenario and we played the fully co-op mode.
Zombicide is like this.
Yeah, Zombicide doesn't have any exploration, does it?
No, the map, the whole map there. Is there. Yeah.
So like that, right? Like a little miniatures co-op skirmish game, I guess is what I'd call it. So all the turtles all have their own special abilities. They all have three dice that are specific to them that have completely different, well, at least like, you know, modified faces compared mm-hmm. to the other turtles. They all have cards that you get to choose from at the beginning that will give you powers that you can activate during the game. Like special moves, I think is what they call them, mm-hmm. not powers. They don't really have superpowers or anything like that. And you use those to fulfill the mission objective, which for us was to defeat Alapex, this mutant fox, human fox, you know, like amalgam, like a fox version of the turtles or whatever, right? Like they're yeah. they're turtle humans.
She's a ninja fox.
Yeah, they're yeah. So anyway, so we had to defeat her. And the game started out really interesting. Like it was fun. It was really breezy. Like we were just like kind of like flying around as the turtles and just like, you know, knocking heads off of Foot Clan and like little thugs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then we started fighting Alapex, and for like it seemed like an hour we were just rolling dice against her.
Right. Yeah.
Until we got to the final round, and I cheated on one die roll because she has like an ability to like negate all damage, and she just kept doing it.
Right.
Because we kept rolling poorly, and I was like, screw this. Like, you know, like I'm going to roll the odds are in our favor now. And then we rolled one attack and took her out, and I was like, yay, we did it, right? Awesome time. But we're kind of left at the end being like, this doesn't feel super tightly designed.
No. At least with that boss. I mean, it might have been different, given different mechanics for the boss. And we talked about a number of ways, like, we can improve the boss mechanics.
Yeah, we started talking about house ruling. And,
right, yeah. But, yeah, that was sort of... I generally enjoyed the game. I you know, I typically like this kind of thing with miniatures and fighting.
And it has some interesting mechanics.
And it does.
The three dice that are on the outside of your dice line of three dice in a row go to the turtle on your left and right. So, like, you know, my right. leftmost die goes to the turtle on my left, and my rightmost die goes to the turtle on the right. So you always have five action symbols that you can execute, whether that's for one of your special abilities or just for, like, the sort of basic use of it. You know, like, mm-hmm. so, like, a skateboard is movement. You know, like, a katana is a melee attack. A shuriken is a ranged attack. But also those things can be exchanged, rather, for those basic things for activating the cards that you chose at the beginning of the game.
Right, yeah. And the card activation, the card's abilities are really kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so like it definitely makes you feel like you are cooperating with the turtles as a team. You know, you're definitely, you have that sense of unity that you see out of turtle comics and turtle movies and turtle shows and everything. So if you're familiar with that property and you know that these brothers are tight, you know, and they got each other's backs, and they're gonna, you know, at some point they're gonna all, you know, like rotate their shells around one guy and smash him together and everything. You get that feeling from this game when it's working well. And then when it didn't, it was like...
When it didn't, all you were doing was standing there and rolling dice.
Yeah, and it just ground to a halt. And so I'm like...
And it feels real bad when you line up like a huge attack against the boss and she rolls one die and just kills it right out the gate.
Yeah, so mixed feelings on this one. I'm going to reread the rule book because I was a little fuzzy on a lot of the rules.
Yeah.
We were kind of just making up the stuff as we go for the stuff that wasn't completely clear.
Also, it was kind of late at night.
It was pretty late at night. So I'm going to reread the rule book, maybe take a second look at that. Maybe that's another thing we're going to touch again on the internet someday on if it's on Tabletop Simulator or whatever. Because time will be running out on whether or not people can run out and get this, I'm guessing.
Right, that's true.
But, you know, like so far, I'm interested in trying it out some more, but it's definitely not the best one of these I've ever played. So, but there's definitely some interesting ideas in there with the dice sharing mechanic and everything. That's great. Today, we played Endeavor Age of Sail.
Yay.
It's a game that we played digitally during Gen Con 2020 for the first time. That was the first time we played it. We didn't actually finish that game because somebody ruined it. But we set it up and played a two-player game just between the two of us today, which was very low conflict. Actually, I would say zero conflict.
Zero conflict.
Right. In a game that is pretty low conflict already, but has the potential for a little bit of conflict.
Sure.
You can kind of like take people's stuff.
Yeah, there was conflict in the way that you can like block other players. You can actually attack other players, sort of. We didn't do that this time, but there were a couple of instances where like you like claimed something before I could.
Yeah, I took the ability to attack early on, and then I looked at what I would get for doing it and then what I could get by doing the other available action on that space. And I was just like, well, I actually just get more for
just
going over here
thing.
And minding my own business.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So just leave you alone. And So very low conflict game. Lots of placing wooden discs on things.
Very Euro.
Yep. Very Euro. Really somewhat problematic concept. In the sense that there's now this sort of reckoning about imperialism and colonialism in board gaming, because that's basically what it's all about.
So if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, we brought up on the Gen Con podcast last year that it's a game that does involve slavery. It doesn't ignore it. And in the rule book, they have a long paragraph explaining their views on how horrible it was and why they felt like they couldn't just ignore it when doing an Age of Sail type game. So they put it in as a mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
There is a downside to it. If slavery is abolished, you lose tons of points and, a lot of like the sort of resources that you've built up as well, or at least the resource tracks.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, they have some additional, optional sort of rules you can put into the game called exploits, and one of them is the Underground Railroad. It's another way of, abolishing slavery. So they've tried to, it looks like they've tried to put it in the game in a way that's as sensitive as they felt they could, while also giving options for the players to say, well, we don't approve of this, you know, like we would have been on the side of good, and so we want to get rid of it and everything.
I mean, it's also perfectly fine if you just, I think, if you just leave the slavery stuff out. Like, we didn't touch it.
We didn't
the whole
touch
game.
It. And I imagine, I mean, we also were playing two players. I mean, it didn't feel like there was much of a need
for
it, right? Yeah. I imagine on higher player count games where there's less real estate for everybody to spread out in, then it gets more tempting, right?
Probably.
But the way we were playing, there was no need. And why would you do that if you didn't need to, right?
Right, yeah.
Like, it just feels yucky to touch the slavery deck.
I know. Yeah. I think I'm going to get some slaves. No, that feels really bad.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, in the game, they try to explain that they felt bad just not putting it in and ignoring it. But, you know, like they wanted to put it in a way where it's at least shown that it's something that is like has negative consequences in the long run.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. What?
My screensaver just turned on.
Oh.
We're still recording. I think we are.
Okay. Doing things on the fly here, folks.
Not used to doing this on a laptop.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So aside from that, and you know, the theme, you know, their ships literally going from Europe to various parts of the non-white world.
Everywhere but Antarctica, I think.
Right. Yeah. And colonizing the place. But aside from that, it's a decent game.
You know, it doesn't explicitly have, well, I guess it kind of,
well,
does
the action is called Occupy.
Yeah. I guess that is basically colonization.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, these ships are going from Europe to like South America occupying forts.
Mechanically, the game is quite fun. Mechanically, the game is very satisfying. Every round, I feel like I did something great and I feel rewarded by what I'm doing. Now, the other thing about the game, and we talked about this earlier, is the iconography is not intuitive. Like, like there's a ship icon for one of the actions. However, every single action in the game is somehow related to ships. So how do I keep straight which one is for shipping lane, which one is for shipping people over to occupy places, which one is for, what's the other one? Like
influence?
I don't know, man.
I don't know. It's like goods or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's all shipping stuff around the world and bringing, it's all thematically, you know, running shipping companies, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it just feels like we were confused the whole time with what icon did what, and we started just calling the different actions by their symbol.
Right.
So if we went to if we drew a card, we called it box rather than whatever the actual name of it is, because that helped us keep it straight. So that was the only other criticism of the game other than the theme itself and, you know, the fact that there is slavery involved in it, because thematically there was slavery at that time. So, but mechanically, solid, I really love that game.
Yeah, I know.
I really like playing it.
So do I. I enjoy it.
Okay. Last game on our list, the thing we played just a little bit ago, is a game that was released at Gen Con called Furnace.
Yes. So Furnace is, it's kind of like an engine building, economy kind of game. You're supposed to be capitalists in 19th century, I think it's London.
It looks just like Brass, like in terms of the artwork and everything, except that there's no board. This is all card-based
it's all
play.
Cards. Yeah. And it's basically two rounds. You auction off different factories that do various different things, and then you make all your factories produce what they can. The goal being to make the most money by the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's real simple. It's played over four rounds. The auctioning mechanic is super simple. You have four discs labeled 1 through 4. And you use those to bid. It has a cool kind of twist on the auction thing that if you bid on a property and you don't get it, there's a compensation like award for having bid.
Which is a good way to get resources, resources to other resources.
Yeah. And even in the rulebook, it says, you know, often that bidding on something and not getting it can be more beneficial than
absolutely
actually getting
there
the
were definitely times where I got disappointed that I won the auction.
The other thing is it can be a little bit of a brain burner trying to, so you have all these factories now in front of you and you can only activate them one at a time, and you can't go back to one that's been previously activated, transferring materials, you know, between these various factories that do various things to optimize your use of coal and iron and oil and upgrading and whatever else to get the most money can be really kind of a lot to figure out.
Yeah.
But however, other than that, that's not even really a big downside. I mean,
that's the game.
That's
if you like this sort of puzzle, right?
Yeah.
Optimizing these actions that you get to take in concert with all of these resources that you have or are trying to collect, and either converting them into more useful resources or using the resources themselves or the resources you've converted to in order to get the most number of points that you can out of that,
right?
Out of creating an engine to do all of that and thinking about min-maxing it. If that's the puzzle you like, if you're into that, then that's the game. That's what's exciting about it. I mean, that in addition to the auction mechanic.
Like, right.
There's two phases. There's the auction, and then there's the run it all now, right?
Yeah.
And that's the game. I mean, there's no downside there. It's just, do you enjoy that or not? Do you enjoy auction mechanics? Do you enjoy these optimization puzzles? If yes and yes, then get Furnace.
I liked it, and I think I like it because it's short.
It was short. It was it was perfect.
Right.
In terms of length,
right.
I think.
So,
like, we got it done in like 30, 40 minutes.
Right. If you're going to spend like an hour doing this kind of like brain busting, figuring stuff out, I don't think I would like it as much.
You probably get a little tired, right?
Yeah, yeah. But because it's only about 30 to 40 minutes,
it's the perfect length for the amount of thought you have to put into it.
Exactly.
And how complicated the tableau in front of you gets. Because we had like 12 cards in
something
front of us
like
at one
that.
Point
yeah.
that all had up to like two activities that they do, so you're like, in what order I'm gonna do these 24 things, right?
Right, yeah.
It's like, okay, after doing that four times, I'm like, that was fun, I'm really glad we're done.
Right. Yeah, so I think if, you know, if these kind of, if you enjoy those kinds of things but you don't like the typical playing a Euro for an hour and a half,
2 or 3 hours,
you know, or 2 or 3 hours doing that kind of thing, then this might actually be a good option.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's a great crunchy Euro that plays in a shorter but appropriate time frame what it is. And it's not super expensive. You said it was 40 there.
It was MSRP, 40 MSRP.
Which means that, you know, this is probably going to be a pretty good steal at discounted places. And even at 40, I feel like it's a good value.
Yeah. And the art on the cards, so all the factory cards are, they're art renditions of famous 19th century factory buildings.
Yeah.
And they all look really nice.
There's industrialist cards that you take at the beginning for which industrialist you are, and they'll have like sort of a special ability or a special perk or whatever.
Yeah.
You get a, everybody gets a different starting building, so there's an asymmetrical start to it.
Yep.
I liked the quality of the card stock and everything.
Yeah, they
feel
nice. I liked
the artwork. All of it just seemed great to me for the price and for, you know, like the kind of game it was. It felt like a very well-designed game.
Yeah, I'm happy with it.
Yeah, I feel like we just reviewed it. I don't know that we're going to do a full review on this one because I don't know what else we can say. I think if you like that kind of game, this is a great game to get.
Yeah, for sure.
I thought it was great.
Yep, and it's, I think it's Arcane Wonders that published
it. It is Arcane Wonders, yep. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, it was Dragon Dawn. Now I've forgotten the third letter. Dragon Dawn Productions, Dragon Dawn Studios.
Oh, the Factory 42.
Dragon Dawn Productions was who produced Factory 42. That was a question we came up with earlier, and that is the answer. 30 minutes later.
Yay.
Yeah. Okay. So that was Gen Con 2021, days 3 and 4.
Yes.
How'd you feel about it overall, Jason?
It was a decent Gen Con. It wasn't the best Gen Con. No, but it was a decent Gen Con.
It was especially
compared
digital.
To, yeah, like not really having one.
Yeah, you know, everybody had masks on. Social distancing was not happening.
It depends on where you were, but
pretty much not happening anywhere.
Anywhere in the exhibit hall was really rough.
The exhibit hall, walking through the convention. Now in the rooms themselves where games were being played, the tables were appropriately spaced out.
Yeah.
You were sitting, you know, 1-2 feet away from the people to your left and right. So it's not like everybody was 6 feet away from everybody else.
Right.
But most of the people that were sitting next to were, you know, from our group. So it was only like, you know, I might only have like 1 or 2 additional people that were outside of our core group that was already sharing all the germs back in the room.
Yeah.
So that wasn't bad, but the exhibition hall floor was, you know, like less crowded than usual for sure, but
yeah,
still
but
crowded
still
enough
crowded.
That if you were paranoid, you weren't going to feel great being there.
Right.
Mask use was great though. Overall, like 99% of everybody I saw, maybe 99.9% of people had their mask on and over their nose. And we took COVID tests this morning and we all passed.
Yep.
So we're going to do it again tomorrow, I think.
Yes, and then I have a...
You have one Tuesday.
I have a PCR test on Tuesday.
We're
going to
keep checking ourselves and make sure that we didn't bring home the plague.
Right.
but, yeah, I mean, overall, just not as much to look at, just not as much to do, and less motivated to stay out in the miasma doing it. So
right, yeah.
Yeah, so hoping next year is even better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, moving forward from
exactly, yeah.
the disaster that was last year.
So we have a lot of games that we want to probably dig into a little deeper as far as reviews go. We're talking about maybe going back to weekly recordings eventually. I don't know if that's going to happen in the next week or two.
Yeah.
But we might start recording a little bit more often. And if not, then we'll still do every other week at the very least. So you'll have that to look forward to. We'll probably take a little break here because we just pumped out 4 episodes in like a week. But probably within 2-3 weeks, we'll probably get back on that horse and start riding again.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you in a couple weeks, and then we'll see Gen Con again in 2022.
Later.
Bye.